Thanks for listening to Star Lores. If you like the show, please consider subscribing and giving a 5-star rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also help us make more great content by becoming a patron at www.patreon.com. We would also love to hear from you on social media. You can follow Star Lores on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Enjoy the show, and may the Force be with you.
You are listening to the Star Lores Podcast.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Are you stuck up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder?
Well, I was going to Tosche Station to pick up some power converters.
All right, and welcome aboard the Millennial Falcon for our interim episodes, interseason episodes. Today, we are going to be discussing fan films and fan fiction, in a way, in the Star Wars galaxy. For this episode, we're not necessarily going to rank them. We might give it a little bit of a rating or like the good and the bad, but it's not our goal to necessarily stack them up against each other, but maybe just like highlight some of the really talented artists and storytellers in the Star Wars community and show how big the Star Wars universe in that, like, anyone can kind of write or make a story that fits in with the broader Star Wars narrative.
So the first one we'll talk about, was it Apprentice? Darth Maul Apprentice?
Yeah.
Yep.
And so, yeah, this is kind of like a Kung Fu Star Wars movie almost. Which is fun, obviously, with Darth Vader. That's a direct, or Darth Vader, Darth Maul. The Kung Fu movie is a direction that you can go. And Star Wars has a lot of sort of influences from Wuxia, I think is like the cinema term in China, like those old school Kung Fu movies from the 70s.
Yeah.
So it's cool to see that premise sort of paid off, that we do in a more complete and more strictly like martial artist kind of way than we do in most Star Wars stories.
Yeah, it did kind of have almost a Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon kind of aesthetic to it.
They're having a big saber battle in this kind of pretty idyllic forest.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a strength of the film too, is just their location.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It looked good. They didn't have to like green screen anything, or not that much anyway.
Well, also, and just great use of drone shots. You know, they had a lot of, you know, overhead shots and wide, like cinematography and stuff like that.
They actually have a How It Was Made video too.
And, okay.
They had.
I didn't watch that.
Yeah, they had a decent size like production crew, and I mean a budget relative to like what a fan movie would be.
Yeah.
So it looks like they really knew what they were doing in terms of cinematography and equipment. They had the whole setup and everything. I believe they were, they're not American.
No, I think they're like Nordic somewhere, like Denmark or Norway or something.
Yeah, one of those countries. But.
Belgium or something. It kind of sounded a little Belgian to me.
I was thinking maybe more Scandinavian, but even their accents were all, you could tell
I did appreciate that they did choose to film in English, though. So
yeah.
Understand. Not that dialogue was the
in basic important thing.
In basic.
Yeah. Yeah.
All Star Wars films are actually just in English.
What's that?
I said, what is English? I've never heard of that.
This is Terra, not...
it was like a good story, and, you know, some of the CGI stuff was cool. But I think, obviously, the strength of this film was like the choreography in the fight scene. It was really excellent. And I did notice at the end of the credits, there was some kind of like martial arts school involved. So I'm guessing a lot of the actors were
actually trained gymnasts and martial artists.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
it really shows in the work.
Yeah.
Yeah. They definitely, Darth Maul does some pretty excellent backside kicks. I noticed.
And it was like
pretty hard.
it was like creative too, you know. It wasn't just stuff you've seen before, but
yeah,
it's cool.
The narrative of it is not like super deep or anything. No. It doesn't need to be either. Yeah. Not everyone needs to be some like epic Shakespearean tale. But one of the things I did appreciate about the narrative is that it could very easily slot into the movies, even using a main character like Darth Maul. It doesn't do anything that like discredits the established fiction.
Yeah.
So like this story.
Should we talk about any of that? Like Darth Maul leading into episode one type lore?
Yeah.
So for this one, this is like Darth Maul's mission to become a fully fledged Dark Lord of the Sith. And he has to kill a bunch of Jedi. And so presumably this was like the first attack, I guess. So this
or at least a very early attack, yeah.
So this is around the time, like right before the movie, I would guess.
Yeah, at some point prior to episode one, which also is why, spoilers, if you haven't gone to watch it, we encourage everyone, just kind of a side note, everyone to watch some of these recommendations, give a lot of those creators some views and stuff on YouTube and everything. Yeah. But anyways, as I was saying, I don't know what I was saying.
Darth Maul's tattoos.
Oh, yeah.
Have I ever talked about his tattoos and how it's like Darth Sidious put them into...
I think you brought it up once.
As a child, Darth Sidious did a very painful tattoo procedure to Darth Maul and is not only the red, but the black. That's like both tattoos, I think.
I think he was naturally
red. Or is he naturally red?
Skinned. Yeah. I think the black are the tattoos.
Okay, so the black is the tattoo, which is like most of his body.
Yeah.
And Darth Sidious did that to him when he was a child. So that's pretty gnarly. And you actually see there's an interesting shot in the performance of him having maybe a little moment of conflict that was very interesting. And I don't want to spoil it too much because it's like one of the only big plot points of it. But it's just a facial expression, and they managed to sort of get across a story beat with just, and it's Darth Maul who's got all this face paint on, and so it's kind of a big ask as an actor to convey that much when you've got that much loaf, as they call it on the Greatest Generation podcast. Whenever you have an alien, a bunch of stuff attached to your face,
yeah, it's like especially meatloaf. Like Star Trek, like Klingon face makeup. Yeah.
So the Zabrak loaf is pretty intense.
Yeah, yeah. I think a really good thing about it was the costume design. It felt very much like a Star Wars costume design, you know. And Maul looked really good. I would say the makeup was maybe a little more glossy than the original Maul.
It was definitely glossy.
Yeah. It was like a little too bright and poppy, you know, whereas like I feel like the original Maul was a little more subtle.
Muted.
Maybe muted is a better word.
Yeah.
But I mean, I still applaud their depiction of Maul.
And it's close enough that like it doesn't pull you out and you're like, oh, that's not Darth Maul.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is also good.
Yeah.
Also another movie character that does appear as well. It also looks pretty good. And the voice acting for him, I don't know if we're totally spoiling or not.
Darth Sidious?
Yeah.
What about the voice acting?
I thought it was all right.
Really?
It was close enough to me that I knew who was talking.
Well, you knew who was talking, but I thought it was like bad. I thought that was like my biggest gripe with the whole movie was...
I thought it just didn't sound like something Sidious would say either.
But is that a problem with the script or the delivery?
Yeah. I would say this. Like a lot of the dialogue wasn't all that strong. It didn't really need to be for this film. But I did find Sidious... a little, just the voice and maybe some of the lines a little off-putting. Like, I just found it hard. It felt very much the same way as when I was watching Solo, trying to imagine like the actor for Han Solo. Yeah. As I just couldn't see it, you know. Right. I couldn't see Han Solo. And similarly with like this depiction of Sidious, I just felt like I didn't feel like that was Sidious. But that it's hard for me to even pinpoint exactly what it was, but a lot of it was the voice. It I don't know, maybe sounded a little too forced,
I would agree with that.
Yeah,
it was maybe almost like someone doing a caricature
of
Sidious,
yeah,
rather exactly. than trying to be Sidious.
Yeah, yeah.
Do we want to talk about another fan film that includes Sidious?
Yeah, we can move on to that one. Hold on,
before we do, I just wanted to mention the YouTube channel is T7 Pro for Darth Maul Apprentice. You can watch it on YouTube.
It really is worth a watch.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I would, as a show, a second and a third.
Yeah,
it's not long. It's 17 minutes long, and it was released in 2016. So it's actually, I guess, in the mid range, I would say, for Star Wars fan films.
Yeah, and I will say, sorry, just as a quick aside, a lot of the films we're reviewing were made within the last 5 years. This is not a comprehensive list of all the fan films. There's certainly more. However, it seems like they're in the maybe last 5 or 6 years, there's been a huge
shift in quality.
Surge in just
the
numbers of fan films being made, which is awesome. I think that's really cool. But also, it's also easier to make films now than
that
it ever has been.
Really clean and professional.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think that's part of it, is just, you know, you don't have to buy a $20,000 camera anymore, you know, to do it. And drones and all that. So
yeah, all those are accessible equipment.
Yeah.
So anyways, our next film.
So it was Darth Vader, Shards of the Past. Is that that what it was? So this is what made me sort of jump to this was bringing up that weird sort of off performance of Darth Sidious. And I think in this one, he's definitely got a better voice.
I thought Sidious, I'm not saying he was great, but I thought he was a better depiction of Sidious in this one than was
this was
Apprentice. He did Darth Maul Apprentice.
That actor did a yeoman's job.
He
did the best he could. And those are big boots to. It's a big robe to fill. I guess he wears sandals. A
big robe to play an entire Senate. Yes,
I think you're. I also want to say, I think you're taking on a big task if you're trying to recreate original characters. If you're not making your own characters, or if you're not making original characters, and you're recreating old established characters, that's a tall task to embark upon, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas if you're making your own, it's a little more
flexibility. Yeah.
That's another thing I was going to say is I think you are just like making your job so much harder as a fan filmmaker by trying to cast original characters.
Not that you shouldn't try, just know that you are like facing a wall of potential criticism.
It's tough.
So props to you for.
Although there's a really good one that I do want to talk about
when we get to
later.
It,
yeah. But we'll talk about Shards of Memory for now.
Shards of the past.
Shards of the past.
Yeah.
So, Darth Sidious gets on Skype. He Skypes Darth Vader from his meditation chamber or his medical facility, it looks like, and we get this really haunting, disturbing shot of, you know, Anakin Skywalker, basically. This is Darth Vader, not in any of his prosthetics or his armor. And he's just like hanging, and he's just this quadruple amputee burn victim with like.
Yeah, yeah. That was actually a sweet scene.
This respirator around his neck. And then his boss essentially is like.
Calling him.
Yeah.
Get up. Get your suit on. You gotta come.
Yeah, like the Vader outside of his suit. They did like an excellent job.
That was a powerful shot. Yeah. I really appreciated that.
Yeah, like that could come out of the main series.
Yeah, and he did actually look good. Part of it, what they did well was not showing it too long, because I'm sure we would have noticed things.
But
they showed it for just the right that you got some like sort of grisly flesh melding into steel kind of shots, and that was good. So Darth Vader goes to Darth Sidious's chambers then. Now he's all in his armor. And Sidious is like, "So what's on your mind, Han?" And then Darth Vader's like, "Nothing. I'm fine." He actually says the word, "I'm fine."
Yeah.
And Darth Sidious.
Now you have to remember, though,
you can't lie to me, Vader.
I'm guessing
you're not fine. You're angry.
The setting of this is like right after Episode 3.
Or close to it.
Yeah. It's not, you know, it seems to be within a year.
Fresh.
Seems to be within a year or two of the clone turning into
the clone troopers are still around at this time.
Exactly. Yeah.
And actually, that's something that I will give props to the guys who made this, the filmmakers who made it, is that I thought the Clone Troopers costumes were really good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
they were spot good. On.
They didn't look like cheap.
I liked all costs. The I thought that this was really good costume design as well.
Awesome, yeah. It's cool as an exploration into like the psyche of Darth Vader. And again, like whenever, same thing, right? Going after like a big movie character like Vader is like a big task. So yeah, they did a good job of like staying consistent. Like it was the whole story element was completely believable within the range of what these characters
it's
would
just
do.
Just that one line, like, I'm fine. I feel like Darth Vader's never said the words, I'm fine.
Maybe he did as Anakin, though. That sounds like something Anakin would say.
Anakin would have said that.
I'm fine, Mom.
I'm fine, Padme.
Yeah, I mean, you could explain
just
it as...
Just dreaming about your inevitable death again.
Within the theme of it's sort of like he's still trying to exercise Anakin Skywalker and fully become Darth Vader in the story. That's sort of the angle they're going at, you know? So,
which is a very cool story.
And, you know,
conceptually, it's very cool.
And not to self-promote or anything, but if you want to learn more about that, this particular time in Darth Vader's life, you can refer to our Darth Vader episode
because
we get into this and there's a lot of interesting fallout and character development for Vader around this period. And so that was also a great call by the filmmakers to make it here because there's a lot of drama at that spot in Vader's life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just a little bit for behind the scenes on this one. So this one's actually made by Star Wars Theory, who is one of the biggest Star Wars YouTubers. He has a lot of content across a lot of different things. This was a passion project of his. I was following kind of like the making of it side of it. I won't do this for all of them. I just don't know all the other like behind the scenes stuff.
Sure.
But in this one, it was really interesting because he talks about how much of like he put a lot of personal money behind this. And he wanted to make it a bigger series.
Yeah, yeah.
And Disney actually got involved with this one and essentially shut it down. Which is unfortunate because he wanted this to be like a bigger arc and everything.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the status of it is now. I remember there was a little bit of a back and forth. He was trying to persuade Disney to like, hey, let me just do this for fun. I will like sink my own money into it. I won't ask for any monetization of any kind to make $0 on it. And this is partially off of memory, so I could be wrong on the details, but essentially Disney still shut it down.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting...
Very unfortunate.
Yeah, and it's an interesting, like...
It seems to be a pivot from Disney's former position because there's been lots of fan films made.
Yeah.
You know.
And even ones that have been monetized in different ways and stuff. Yeah. Not that they...
You almost wonder if Disney maybe did it because it was so clear that he was banking on a lot of... like established canon lore to make that story. And maybe they were like,
we wanted to do this.
Yeah, exactly.
You stole it from us.
We were going to steal those ideas.
Who knows like what the logic was behind.
Yeah. It's very interesting and very weird in the sense of like Disney doesn't typically go after fan films and fan makers.
Yeah. They didn't shut down Chad Vader, did they?
No. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Which is the ultimate Disney or Star Wars fan film. I don't know why. We should just do a podcast about Chad Vader.
That there was one thing I didn't like in this, and that was Palpatine's throne room. I felt like it was way too small. It felt like just a room, and you know, like
with fancy lights.
It almost looked like a stage or some kind of stage set, and it didn't fit in with like. I feel like the rest of the shots, you know, and it almost made Palpatine a little bit more insignificant. Like, why are you in? I know it's like a minute detail, but to me, it just kind of irked me. I was like, this room just like is too packed and small. Yeah. Like he should be in a grand throne room, you know, like that. That's
something
where with like adornments and
conveys his importance.
Yeah, exactly. Where the throne room or whatever room he was in.
I'll chime in with a bit of excessive lore knowledge. So it's hard to say. At this time, I think he might have still been doing his remodeling of the senatorial palace, essentially, that he turned into the imperial palace. But at a certain point, Darth Sidious Emperor Palpatine did sort of retreat to a specific throne room that was like his sanctum, that if he wasn't on the Death Star, he was at the throne room, basically, for the entire reign. Although at this point, I'm not sure... the renovations probably would have just been getting started. So he might be in a weird, crappy, like Space Motel 8 room. It's hard to tell.
Maybe. Sorry, the office is being remodeled.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there might be a good lore reason that...
You know, that actually...
Good call, Star Wars theory.
I could buy that theory, actually.
Yeah. Anyways, that was kind of like my only gripe was just the set that they used. The I do agree.
It didn't look great. The throne room.
It didn't look like
bad Space Motel 8, though.
Yeah.
I like that we get that bit of lore about travel lodgings on Coruscant. It's like the housing market is so bad there that even the Emperor can't get a decent space to live.
Even on his budget,
it's like the 500 square feet of the galaxy.
I was gonna say Vancouver, but
50,000 credits a day or something.
Yeah.
Should we move on to TIE Fighter?
Oh yes, yeah. TIE Fighter.
Yeah. So Star Wars TIE Fighter is, our only animated fan film on this list that we have today.
Not to say that there aren't other great ones, but
yeah, and it's. It's in an Japanese anime style, manga style animation. And it's just about TIE fighters fighting the Republic and destroying some ships.
Very simple story.
Yeah. It's like almost no story at all.
It's quite light on the story. Although I think whenever you drop dialogue out of a movie, there's sort of a lot. It gives you a lot of things that you can just read into it for fun. Yeah. So like some character development that I saw in it, in light of the fact that we didn't get anything else, was sort of the TIE fighters being people. And because camera does this thing where it like goes straight through into cockpits and then the shot like reverses all the way out of a cockpit and goes into like another ship, and so the camera angle does a lot of interesting things with like crossing barriers, and then there's another barrier that's crossed where you can see the TIE fighter pilots, like it makes their armor and their helmet sort of transparent, and so you can actually see their faces, their facial expressions, and that kind of thing, which you normally don't get, right? Because that's sort of the big thing about being in the Empire is you're
a faceless machine.
You're just a cog in the machine, right? And it sort of humanizes them, but yet at the same time, it demonizes them because they're vicious, right?
Yeah, ruthless.
The things they're saying to each other, they're like, leave no survivors.
Yeah.
Kill them all. It's like these guys.
Yeah.
They might be human, but it's not making me feel any better.
Yeah. And you know what?
I
have to say, like, and I'm no connoisseur of anime, so maybe I'm not like super familiar, but I thought it just stylistically, it looked beautiful. It was like such a beautiful rendition of like art. And I love the idea of doing an anime Star Wars, you know?
I completely agree.
I think that's like such a good idea. Somebody should
Disney should get Studio Ghibli to do Star Wars next.
I have it. It's not official, and I'm hesitant to call them fan films, but I debated talking about, well, I'm going to do it now anyways. there's a series called Star Wars anime openings. So they took the animations from Disney's, they do a bunch of shorts. I forget what they're called. Galaxy of Adventure shorts. Yeah. Okay. And they stitch them together and put like traditional anime, like rock music and Japanese characters that I've heard they don't even mean anything or say anything. And they make it look like it's the opening of an anime for each movie. And they look sweet. The Galaxy Adventure shorts, which are an actual Disney production, actually are pretty cool in terms of like
action. They do cool. I tried to watch them though, and it was just like too obviously marketed at children for me.
Sure, that element is definitely there.
It just like bumped me so hard that I just couldn't get into it.
Yeah, but just a kind of side note of Star Wars anime.
But that anime opening is fantastic. Yeah. It really does look like. Yeah. That is exactly how George Lucas was Japanese.
Yeah, that's how
what would have happened.
Yeah, but it was I enjoyed it. It kind of felt like there was no real plot to it other than
you're just there to watch
destroying
the Empire be the Empire.
Yeah.
No,
it was sweet. I love that.
It was a romp, and I think the anime. I'm not like super into anime. I haven't watched much of it in the last like 10 years. when I was into it. I saw like Gundam Wing and Vision of Escaflowne and stuff. And anime does space battles like really well, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
That's an easy thing to do. So
yeah, for sure.
That's like, if we could get 2 hours of that, I would be very excited.
Yeah. or even like a series, like something, you know, TV show.
And I was really impressed that it was just the one guy who did this animation.
Yeah, that's crazy. It was like one guy who who did
animated
everything.
This whole thing.
Yeah,
it looks amazing.
At the same time, like it's not very long, obviously.
Yeah, it's like 5 minutes, I think. Yeah,
7 minutes, 27 seconds.
Well, that's with credits.
Okay, sure.
Yeah,
probably so 7 years about of his life.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so like about 5 minutes of actual
animation. Yeah. So it is a big ask for him. And on that note, the maker is OdaKing77077. Which makes sense.
The credit of the guy's actual name is in there at the end somewhere. But OdaKing is just a YouTuber.
Yeah.
And he has a real name that
I'm sure OdaKing isn't his birth name.
because of course an allusion to otaku, I would assume.
Yeah.
I don't know. The term for the Japanese anime fanboy were Star Wars otakus.
It's a new thing now. We're starting it here.
All right. Should we move on to the next one here?
Let's do it.
So TK436, A Stormtrooper Story. What'd you guys think of this one?
Honestly, I think it's one of my favorite fan films. We watched a lot of fan films leading up to this. It's definitely in the top three for me personally.
I was actually just talking to Sam about that. I actually thought it was arguably my favorite as well.
Yeah.
I feel conflicted about it because I think the story was the best out of almost.
Yeah, it has like almost, the strongest plot.
Almost any of them. Yeah. It has the best story, but there are some visual things that just really did not look good to me at all.
I do agree with you,
and
Sam.
Like really detracted from its overall quality. I felt, but the story was there.
I'd almost have to watch again to see what, because I thought I actually really enjoyed the visuals, and I liked a lot of the cuts.
There are cool visuals, but there are some points that are fairly weak that make it look definitely like
they like reused a shot of him like sort of running through the desert and blasting like five times. It was like just the same shot. They just at like five different points, and I was like, oh come on guys.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Yeah. To me it came off like it's also very stylistic in the way that it's shot. So it's sometimes it's hard to say like was it a stylistic choice or was it limitations of being a fan film?
Yeah. I do feel like some of those limitations, like they were trying to go for stuff and do sort of big, almost big budget, ambitious things.
Yeah, and then
but
you
they
can
just
tell,
really didn't have the budget to do it.
To pull it off. And that's, and I agree with that. That is one of its weaknesses for sure. Is there times it definitely feels like looks like a fan film, but then there are other times that it's like,
yeah,
especially the glowing really stormtrooper eyes. I love that.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So that, I was way into that. Cause that also is a great payoff of a science fiction premise that I've always wondered about stormtroopers is like, so obviously those aren't sunglasses, those lenses, right? They're going to have a heads up display of some kind. And we never get to see that in any Star Wars properties, right? You never get to see what's displayed on the inside of a stormtrooper's helmet.
And we finally see what's inside a clone trooper's helmet if you've ever played Republic Commando.
Yeah, that's the closest we ever come, right?
Yeah, and I think this this short film had the best payoff probably of any of the short films that we're talking about today, in my opinion.
That is one of the parts too that I feel conflicted about.
Oh, really?
It's really cool, but it makes the galaxy seem very small. And
that's not what I thought.
It's not that I hate it, even. It's just. Yeah, I maybe because I'm jaded from that happening in other properties, and then I just like, oh, this again, and that could just be a me thing. I'm totally open to that.
Yeah,
it if it was just a nobody, I think it would be equally. I don't know. To me, it just makes things seem small. But that again, I have that problem with a lot of different properties. So again,
I'm not sure I know what you're.
Well, it just seems like. It just so happens that in this galaxy with a galactic scale war going on that the stormtrooper fights his ex-girlfriend in the Rebels.
They both could
have been anywhere fighting anybody planet, in the galaxy, right?
I guess so. I guess my immediate thought I guess I sort of thought about it, but I was thinking from the angle, well, like, they're both obviously in the same sector of the galaxy, and each signed up with a chapter of one signed up with a chapter of the rebellion, and one went to the local
garrison. Yeah. Yeah.
And then they both, you know, like,
it just leads to, because now they have to pacify their own planet.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I can see how but that's you reading into it. Right? Yeah. You're making that up.
Fair enough. But it does seem plausible.
The home planet, by the way, was Bakura, which I do.
Right.
Like.
Right.
I do like that he called that out.
Yeah.
Because you just don't hear that. So, but it's not clear to me that they were on Bakura.
Right. At the now, end. If they were, then that's more easily explainable. Or he goes back to his home village to pacify that, and then he runs into her. That makes sense. So it could be explained. To me, it's just like you said, they could both be anywhere in the galaxy, and they just happen to face off right there. You
know? It's a short film, though. They're trying to have a readable plot point in a short film, right?
And it does add that extra like heavy emotional heaviness, right? Like, That rebel could have been anyone. It could have been his father, his brother, someone he knew, grew up
with. Well, I also just loved like the sort of moral questions it brought up. Like the one thing he asked is like, how could she have joined the rebellion? Like, doesn't she know what she's doing? You know, and that's like, it's sort of interesting when you're going from one person's perspective. They feel like they're the most right.
Yeah, the Empire of the good guys, obviously.
Yeah, clearly.
And the rebels are terrorists.
Yeah. Even though it depicts him doing sort of evil things, he sort of justifies it, right?
Yeah.
On his Twitter, he definitely is regularly contributing to the hashtag the Empire did nothing wrong. hashtag.
You didn't see that on his heads up display. It's showed right in the corner.
Exactly. But I kinda like that. I thought that was like a cool conflict to bring up and you know, and he was sort of just bought into the Imperial propaganda and you see that as well.
So I fund the Empire.
Yeah.
I also really do like that it doesn't become a redemption story either.
Yeah.
It could have very easily gone that route. Like, oh,
it was a tragedy.
Suddenly he changes his mind about everything and he realized he was wrong. It's like, nope.
You know what's weird? Almost all of these fan films are tragedies. They all sort of
almost
end.
Like the narrative of Star Wars.
I guess so.
Half of it is at least a tragedy. Yeah. Anakin is definitely a tragedy.
Oh, boy, I've been reading
prequels,
Star Wars Legacy this week.
Oh, yeah.
The tragedy of Star. We'll get into it.
Have you heard the tragedy of Darth Vader?
The wise. Darth Vader, the wise.
Okay, should we move along? Any other things you guys want to say about this one?
I just want to say I do appreciate there's no main characters, there's no lightsabers. It's gritty, it's war. I think obviously it was probably heavily inspired by Rogue One.
Yeah.
And I really like, this is also probably a bias in me, is I like war movies and this felt like a war movie.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I liked about it too.
And it felt like dark and heavy and like gritty, which I do really like.
There's like a lot of gray tones.
And just the stories of regular people, like I said, I like,
yeah.
I don't know if I came across this quote or something along the lines of like, it's the small stories that make Star Wars feel big.
Yeah.
Like you don't cross any main characters. It's just a rebel and just a stormtrooper. And that's their story.
I think there needs to be so much more of that in Star Wars. I think that's why the
Not everyone needs to be a Jedi.
Dark Horse did a run of comics called, was it Tales or Stories, where it's sort of like Infinities, where they're non-canon, just small stories.
It might
like
be
that.
Tales, yeah.
And there's one by it's another famous comic book artist. His name is Garth Ennis. And he does like zombie horror comics. And that's kind of his thing. But he did a story that was just focused on stormtroopers that was reminiscent of this. And when I was reading that comic, I was like, boy, I would really love to see this this comic book as a short film. And then there's this movie.
Yeah.
So what's it called? Like TK4?
426?
It's called, TK436, A Stormtrooper Story.
Yeah, it's worth your time.
But conceptually, I wish Star Wars would do more of this, you know?
Yeah.
And I like the Mandalorian stuff too, spaghetti western, like just different genres.
There's so much room, within right? You could do Star Wars horror. You could do Star Wars cyberpunk. You could do
Star Wars thriller would be sweet.
And they've done it in the novels, right? In the comic books.
In the comic books, there's also another graphic novel called Tales from Mos Eisley Cantina.
Oh, okay.
And it's just like 120 pages of just what you're describing there, right? That's sort of the conceit of the story, is that these are all just a bunch of guys who are sitting around at Mos Eisley. And if you talk to any of these aliens in that bar, these are the stories that you get. And so there's like a horror story.
Yeah.
Yeah. You really crosses these different genres because you can do that.
You could do
Star Wars
is
big enough to do that. Yeah. And just a little bit about the creators. It's Sam Tubia and Sam Goma Edwards on YouTube. And yeah, definitely worth your time to go check out.
Yeah. I think in terms of just like enjoyability, I probably enjoyed this one the most, but it doesn't mean it was necessarily the most crisp or well done, but it was.
Everything has its
flaws. We said we weren't going to rank them.
Yeah.
But you can say your personal favorite.
But to rank them.
I'm not ranking it. I'm saying
this one's like.
I highly like enjoyed this one.
For me, it's a tie between the TIE Fighter and Darth Maul Apprentice. And then this, this one's somewhere like orbiting those two bodies that are orbiting each other. And it like sort of doesn't really know where to go either. I don't know where to put it. It's good, but some of the visuals just.
They were enough to put you.
They're enough to. Yeah. I'm like, oh, this isn't like amazing, amazing.
Yeah. All right. Should we move on to Star Wars Destroyer?
Yep.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
I thought the cockpit shots in this were pretty good. I really like that storytelling mechanic that Star Wars uses again and again. Sort of based on World War II dogfights. And it just always works.
Totally, yeah. Yeah, and it's sort of easy for the actors to do. They don't really have to do much. They just have to sit.
But you know what? At the same time, like you also have to convey everything through your face, right? You have
your
body's
true.
Not in the shot. So any emotion, all that has to come out in your voice and your facial expressions.
Yeah.
So at the same time, it's a credit to them. As easy as it also looks, it's also
if you're
challenging
like,
in its own way.
Yeah, if you're like an actor who wants to get something on your reel, this is a good shot to be cast in.
That's true. Yeah. And I did think now, I think like when looking at especially dialogue and acting within Star Wars fan films, you're kind of grading on a curve, right? Like they're not going to be, you can't have the same standard that you would for a big budget film. But I thought like these actors were probably more stronger actors that I've seen in all these fan films. And there was quite a bit of dialogue too. This was like a very dialogue heavy fan film, unlike a lot of other ones. And it's, I think it's really hard to do dialogue. I think that's probably one of the biggest challenges when it comes to any kind of fan film, like low budget fan film. It's a difficult thing to do a lot of dialogue.
I thought the actual dog fighting too.
Oh yeah,
the X-wings and the
I thought the CGI was really good.
Looked really good.
The fighting scene.
I'd say that's one of its like big strengths. Like it's very ambitious in what it's trying to portray.
Yeah,
and they pull it off well enough that it's like that looks. Yeah. You know, again, like you said, this is not Hollywood big budget production, but like for what it is, it looks pretty good.
And they paid off a great visual premise too at the end of having the
Cloud City,
the near miss of a Star Destroyer flying into Cloud City.
Yeah.
I almost wish they would have made like more of that of like people fleeing in terror or something as this thing's bearing down on them. But that was like a very cool haunting image.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of like the little things they did, like they referred to. Like the fighters referred to the Imperials as imps, you know, like stuff like
that. It feels like lived in.
Yeah. You know, it was cool. Like it wasn't like.
And to their credit in the Star Wars Rogue Squadron comic book series, the rogues definitely are always referring to the TIE fighters as imps.
Yeah.
The missed opportunity if they really wanted to go into the back catalog of Star Wars phraseology is they could have called them eyeballs. Because that's another thing that the rogues call TIE fighters is eyeballs.
Yeah, totally.
Makes sense on multiple levels.
Exactly.
Those clever levels.
It was a very short one as well.
Yeah, I think it's like 6 minutes.
It almost felt a little too short. Like there wasn't really that also not much to the story, you know. It was just they tried to stop a Star Destroyer they destroyed from hitting Cloud City.
I wasn't even really sure how they did that.
I almost kind of missed it. Well, they like kind of destroyed the engine, then destroyed the bridge, and then it started just falling. And, you know, but the destroyer intentionally aimed at Cloud City as a kamikaze mission, right? So they had to like veer it off course. It was kind of a fun one, you know, but
yeah.
Anything else you guys want to say about that?
Just a bit about the maker.
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah.
It's Arya Mogadam.
Arya Mogadam.
Or Mogadam. Mogadam. Yeah.
Okay.
And this one came out 3 years ago, so it's actually like towards the newer end of things too.
Yeah.
So I don't know anything about the making of, behind the scenes type stuff. If anyone on the slight chance is listening to this and is one of those makers and wants to reach out to us and maybe give us a little backstory about like inspiration and stuff, that'd be cool. But yeah.
Yeah, totally. Okay. Dark Jedi, a Star Wars story. What'd you guys think about this one?
Good fight scene. Yeah. I thought there is a possibility that I always liked. I think something, one of the strengths of the show that we do, I think, is our sort of ridiculous conversations about the nature of the Force.
Yeah.
And this sort of did touch on that a little bit. And
yeah.
So I always like it when they get into the actual crazy metaphysics of how this magical energy field would work. And so there's something the guy says about, you know, you're blinding yourself to the true nature of the Force or something like that. Because yeah. It's a story about a fallen Jedi, right? And so it's interesting to get a little bit of that perspective of, okay, so this guy's clearly not a Sith, right? So that's interesting. He doesn't have a red lightsaber either, as we find out later. And like, he's clearly very attached to this lady. And then there's this one moment where he sort of starts yelling at her and he gets kind of rageful. And based on what they're saying, it doesn't really seem called for. And it almost seems like it could be bad writing, but it could just be good writing in a weird way. That is just like, he's like this because he's like in the thrall of the dark side right now. And it's starting to change him into something more evil.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the strongest points about this, similarly to the Darth Maul short film, was the choreography and fight scene. I think
yeah.
I thought they did a very good job, and I thought it was pretty creative. And I liked actually they tried to use the Force a little more in this fight scene.
Yeah, I always appreciate when they're able to do that.
Yeah, it was, and they didn't. I don't think they used it too much, but they used it in sort of creative ways that seemed to be believable to me. You know.
I like the visual choice of making the antagonist, basically, of the movie have a yellow-bladed lightsaber, because I feel like we don't really get a lot of mainline characters on screen ever in the Star Wars universe with yellow lightsabers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that just looked... It blended good with this, the sort of autumnal
tones.
Forest that they were fighting in. I thought it was a strong visual choice to make it yellow.
Yeah.
It looked almost orange to me.
It could have been almost.
It's sort of. It's orange. It almost looks red. I'm looking at it right.
You're right. It is kind of an orangey.
It is more orangey though.
But it's still got that fall color.
It's still
an orange. Yeah. An orange is also a rare color. Yeah. Like you never see it on screen or anything.
Exactly.
Yeah. There was almost like a very, I don't know, parkour feeling to their the way they fought a lot, very low to the ground a lot of times, you know, which was just kind of cool. That was like the strong part. I didn't honestly care much for the story or the premise of it. I thought it was just almost too easy. I really didn't like the costume design.
That was my biggest gripe.
Yeah.
That's the first thing I was going to say.
Oh, yeah. That was like my biggest
gripe. They look too modern. It looks.
Yeah, I was going to say like... I guess,
you said they did the costume shopping at an outlet mall.
I said I could have literally gone into an outlet mall and just like picked up everything that they were wearing.
Okay. You know? I didn't know if it was just a me thing. I was being too critical.
No.
The only way you can know this is a Star Wars movie is because they have lightsabers.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
There's nothing else and it really identifies it. Star Wars.
Yeah, if they just had like say sticks or something, you would just think you wouldn't know what
this
is.
It was just some bad kung fu movie.
Yeah, like with magic in it, right? Like that's what you'd think about it. So there was nothing. And I thought the Kylo Ren-ish saber that the guy had
was a little crystal.
It was a little tacky. Like
now, I agree with you that it was tacky, but I want to explore something about this.
Okay.
So are you possibly just so soured on anything Disney that you can't appreciate that it is kind of interesting that they explored that weird visual detail. That's a very different visual detail. Kylo Ren's cross hilt, right? That has the energy jets. It's like, why is it doing that? And we never get that. And they're sort of doing Disney's lifting for them. They're sort of exploring why exactly it would be that way. They talk about him getting some new crystal or something for it.
And that's true. Yeah,
he hasn't worked the kinks out yet.
Yeah.
And then, that's right.
So it's unstable. Yeah.
So I kind of missed that part.
So you see the cross hilt at the beginning, and it's just an actual cross hilt.
Yeah.
It's not the jets of plasma coming out.
Yeah.
And then towards the end, those bust off, and it turns into Kylo Ren's lightsaber, except it's orange.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not against the idea of a cross hilt, actually. I know there was a lot of backlash on
that. It's just a cool premise to pay off in a science fiction way in this story
how Sam is reading.
Sure,
this.
Yeah. Fair enough. I don't know. I thought it was like...
I think it's obviously... It's like it's grasping for anything to make it look like Star Wars because we bought our costumes at Outlet Mall.
Yeah, I know. That's almost what I felt like. I don't know. It was just kind of a weird... I don't know if it totally worked, but... Yeah, you know, to each their own.
I do honestly think if they had the costuming of a Maul Apprentice,
this
would be like up there with some of the best.
Yeah. Perhaps. Maybe. I don't know. I just couldn't quite get into this one as much.
So this is more of a criticism of Star Wars fan films in general.
Okay.
Lightsabers in the Forest. Is a very...
I can see that this is a trope.
Overdone thing for Star Wars fan films. Just because
it's pretty obvious why, though. That's purely a practical thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally understand that. But that could be enough to just like on its face, if you don't know anything else about it, you just see, another lightsaber battle in the forest next kind of attitude.
You know, I know Christian thinks my black metal podcast is a stupid idea. Wait, I'm going to get there. Okay. So in like the subculture of black metal... In the early 80s, 90s, there was like a lot of teenagers running around the forest, except they were running in like old ruins in Norway of like monasteries and castles with swords and stuff. And it's like, where are you, the Scandinavian Star Wars fan films? I know that these places are easily accessible if you go to Norway or something.
Have a lightsaber duel in a
go to
castle.
Where? Do yourself a favor. YouTube, this isn't a Star Wars fan film. The music video for Call of the Winter Moon, and just imagine instead of guys dressed up like Kiss, just guys dressed up like
Jedi and
Jedi.
Sith.
It's the same thing. It would have been great.
Yeah. Yeah.
So who did this one? Are you aware? It was Urban Amadi. That's the YouTube channel.
And they shopped at Urban Outfitters.
Clearly. And it looks like they're out of Berlin, so kind of cool.
So they could have done it in a ruin somewhere in Germany, but...
Wow.
It was made by Lawrence Hideyoshi Rui. Sorry if I'm butchering that pronunciation, but thanks for making the film. I did enjoy it.
Yeah, it was definitely a good watch for sure.
Yeah.
And I mean, like I said, lightsabers in the forest. For being overdone, they still managed to do something with it.
Yeah.
That wasn't just... lightsabers in the forest.
Yeah, totally.
I should do a fan film just called Lightsabers in the Forest.
Oh my God.
It's poetic.
That would be like the kind of Trekkies type. That's the documentary we make about people making.
Okay, we gotta hold on. We gotta not talk about this because I gotta get to work on it.
Safe.
Okay, should we move on to the next film?
Yep.
Okay, so next on the docket is Kenobi, a Star Wars fan film. What were your thoughts on this one?
Oh boy. So this one, I think I'm the most polarized on. There's
really?
A lot of good in it and also a lot in it that I really didn't like.
Well, let's talk about the good first.
Yeah, absolutely.
What you liked.
Yeah. But I just want to say, like, of all of them, I think I'm the most internally conflicted on how I feel about it. Overall.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
But let's go around the table first before I... Because mine, you got to kind of mix the good and the bad, so...
Okay.
I thought the actor for Kenobi... And the actor for
Lars
as well, Owen Lars.
Yeah.
They both.
I thought they both did a really good job.
They knocked it out of the park, I thought.
I actually thought this was some of the strongest. And that even the Imperials, like, I thought.
And the Imperial those officer.
Guys, those guys were like perfect, atypical.
He Imperials. Was doing 10 out of 10 Imperial prince.
Yeah. I'm like they should just literally hire him for the Mandalorian.
Just to be some officer.
Honestly, that guy's awesome. Yeah.
Like his whole look, his persona.
Screamo worm tongue in space kind of attitude.
Yeah, it was good. And yeah, like I felt like it almost seemed like Obi-Wan, the actor, was maybe a tad too young for this. For the time that this was,
probably,
but
he could just grow a really good beard.
they should have put some like gray in his beard or something like that. But I digress. Other than that, I thought he actually did it. Like even the way he spoke, he kind of caught the Ewan McGregor, imitations that he had in his voice, which I thought was really good.
I thought he almost even had like shades of what's the act. Old Obi-Wan Kenobi's
Alec Guinness.
Yeah, Alec Guinness.
Some of his lines were delivered like more like Alec Guinness, and some were delivered
I
more
think
like
that
Ewan
was
McGregor.
Intentional to
and
blend I think it was the intentional. Two to show him transitioning from one state to the
and
next.
That's like a yeah, and so, that's an awesome like acting
talent
trick to do.
Yeah, and also, so this the guy who made this film made a Han Solo film, previous short film, which we're not covering. However, if I'm not mistaken. It's the same guy who acted for Han Solo, who acted as Obi-Wan. And he actually did like a surprisingly good job at Han Solo. I was almost like he did better than what's his face? Heidenreich or whatever that guy's name was that played Solo.
Heidenreich.
Yeah. But he got like the sort of way that Harrison Ford speaks like he was able to just get those subtleties in it that I thought like the actor in Solo didn't get. And I was like, and that movie was, I thought, a little bit weaker than this one, but just this guy is like, I feel like he has some good acting chops, you know, but anyways, I digress. That's kind of what I felt was like the strong points of the film.
In fairness to the actor for Solo, I feel like he was probably given the direction of don't try to impersonate Harrison Ford because you'll look stupid.
Yeah, probably.
By the director.
Yeah, it could have been the case.
But that's a mistake because I think that there are great impressionists like this guy who could do a great job.
Yeah,
of pulling it off. Yeah.
So I did like the premise of this, and I kind of like the conflict that was introduced. There were a couple odd things with the story. The one being like, why did the sand people just attack Obi-Wan and leave him there?
For plot.
It was like, it just seemed like
very contrived.
Yeah, it was very, exactly. It was very contrived. It was like, okay. They just left him there and like, did they take anything? He still had his lightsaber on him. And that's another point is he threw away his light after an argument with Lars. He like throws away his lightsaber and then it like looks like he threw a silly argument with Lars. He's going to give up the ways of the Jedi. I just thought that was
guess I was wrong.
Yeah. Owen hurt my feelings.
I just thought it was like a really...
can look after himself.
Yeah. I was like, that's not who Obi-Wan is.
So I will argue. Okay. I do agree with you.
I really wish we would have got a shot when Owen comes into Obi-Wan's cave of Obi-Wan drinking some blue milk shots that we know he's very fond of.
I do agree with you on like that being kind of out of character. There's two, I kind of sit on a fence on this. Is on the one hand, I wonder if they're trying to mimic The Last Jedi's kind of Luke Skywalker feeling of like, oh, cool, like we like that take on Luke. Let's try and find a way to make Obi-Wan have that same thing. And at the same time, like it's cool to see Obi-Wan maybe have some cracks where he doesn't act Jedi-like, and he's even struggling internally.
I wouldn't mind that, but I think the stakes need to be a little higher than he just had an argument with.
Sure, Lar. Yes, absolutely. That's maybe what I would say, is like, maybe I didn't like that they did that.
Yeah.
But there's potential there for sure. And even in the Luke case, I'd say the same thing. There's potential there, but they executed it.
I mean, maybe they'll explore that in the new Kenobi series. That
I wouldn't hold my breath. Go on.
But when it comes, maybe they'll explore something like that.
If it comes, yeah.
What?
I said if.
You're very skeptical of it.
I'm skeptical of a lot of things.
Well, we'll talk about it later, but anyways.
Yeah. Back to this movie.
Yeah.
I really like the Imperial officer. He could be a standalone villain. One thing that irked me, which is kind of a minor pet peeve, is his haircut. I would not take that as a military officer's haircut.
It pulled
me out of it. I don't know.
Really?
Maybe I'm being really picky. But
I'm trying to think if I've seen. It made him seem like more slimy.
Sure,
like,
but then make him like some kind of, you know, government position. More
his
so
look
than a
is
military.
Definitely completed by the slimy hair.
Yeah,
like stuffed under that imperial cap.
Character.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. He needs the greasy hair.
To each their own.
I think the Empire is very respectful of other people's cultures, right? I'm sure he'd say that this is part. I'm a greaser.
Yeah, like to me,
wear my hair this way.
He's a lot like, if you guys listen to our review of Splinter of the Mind's Eye, he's a lot like Grommel in that he's this Imperial officer who's been stationed at this backwater planet on the outer rim that nobody cares about. And it's more of a punishment than it is a promotion, right? Yeah. So it's like, who cares if he lets himself go?
Although we do know by the logic of this particular story, though, that those Imperials had just got there to Tatooine.
Well, but perhaps they were in the sector or something. Maybe. You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean,
you are telling the story here.
I like battling lore theories against each other, though.
But it just seems to be real. I don't know. I didn't hate that. But
Sure. And okay. Like I said, it's a minor point, honestly. Sure.
I do kind of agree with you, but I'm just not sure what the space dress code is.
Yes,
you know what I mean?
You haven't seen the Imperial Policy Manual.
I'm not sure if like culturally they look at hair as kind of the same thing that we do.
Sure.
Although,
in every other instance I've seen. Yeah. But I mean, clone troopers get crazed at their hair too. So that's a debate for another time.
Was there something else you didn't like about this?
The fight at the end.
It was weird.
I thought it was weak. And even
the timing was all off with when Owen pulled the gun. Like, even as bad as stormtroopers are, there was like a good like three count and like none of them were shooting him.
Yeah. And they just really.
So there, to set it up, there's like, what, six stormtroopers maybe?
With
blasters pointed at the Lars family. At some point, Owen gets antsy and shoots their officer. And then they wait like a good five count before they shoot
actually
back.
Respond, yeah. And so it's just really
maybe that was just an editing goof that they just
either way,
fix.
Though, it makes the whole ending fight scene, I think, is the weakest part
of
it.
Takes you out right away.
And then you have like a couple farmers taking on, like, this is always going to be a problem with Star Wars. Is like the stormtroopers are just paper.
But you know what's weird though is it all could have been solved by like just editing some stuff out and bringing in Obi-Wan quicker. Sooner. It would have looked way better with a way shorter fight scene if it was just half the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's also one minor gripe too I had was the fact that Obi-Wan couldn't use his Jedi mind trick on the officer. Like, there's no real explanation.
Unless he was hungover. See, this is my story.
He later could use it on the stormtrooper at the end.
Hungover wore off. Sometimes when you're really hungover, you go for a like, jog or something.
We're supposed to, again, it's another assumption. Are we supposed to assume that officers are more mentally strong? Than
I think that's what the implication was, is that like it doesn't work on everybody. And that is a known fact. I think
that's true. Yeah.
It's a cop out when it works every time. It's like, it just happens. I run into a lot of weak-minded people.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's more a question of like,
I think that's fair.
You see Obi-Wan do this multiple times, but this time it didn't work because same thing with Qui-Gon when he tries it on Watto, right? You kind of expect it to happen. And
I think they even like get into it a little bit in like the Marvel Star Wars of the lore of like what makes a person more or less susceptible to Jedi mind tricks. And like some of it is like, if you're a subservient or you're like a people pleaser, like your personality essentially will also gives you like a psychological vulnerability to mind tricks. Yeah. So that's like some of the ways people get around mind tricks. I think the psychology of Jedi mind tricks is really interesting. I don't know if anybody else does. Yeah.
Stop trying to use it.
Could be a whole episode. Future episode. Anything else you guys want
to
say about
To their credit, huge task to try and take on characters. So yeah. Like there's one
like
thing
I said earlier,
Palpatine, Darth Maul, or Vader who have masks and are like
that is like the big redemption of like an imperfect film is the fact that those performances are so strong.
Yeah.
And even just the balls to try and take it on, totally. Right? Like Obi-Wan is a fan favorite. He doesn't have a mask to hide things you can't hide behind, you know, a bodysuit or anything. You need to really be, and I think, like you said earlier, like the Lars character even, he could straight up have come out of the movie.
Totally, yeah. Right? Yeah.
Owen, and yeah.
Yeah.
So to their credit, for all their weaknesses, it's very ambitious.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It was good. Cool. And that one was filmed by Jamie Costa. And I believe he acted as both Kenobi and Han Solo. He has two Star Wars shorts. Yeah. And check out his Solo one too. It's actually like, I don't think it's quite as good. But it's
worth a watch.
It's a decent hack at trying to be Han Solo, which I think is very difficult to recreate Harrison Ford, any Harrison Ford character.
And I believe that's also a newer movie, right? It came out short, like maybe last year or this year.
Yep. It came out not even a year ago.
Yeah.
Like so Christmas time last year.
Yeah. So it's very new.
Yeah.
I remember a lot of the hype leading up to it when they announced it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Yeah. He must have totally ridden that wave.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone's waiting for the Kenobi show and he's like, oh.
Yeah. So that's it for this episode, our review of Star Wars fan films. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Also, don't forget to check us out on social media. Send us a message. Let us know what you think. If you've seen or heard any mistakes, please let us know. We'll do a correction episode in the future. And don't forget to support us on Patreon, www.patreon.com/StarLords. Anything else?
If you really like this episode, let us know and we'll review another batch of them. And there's quite a few out there, so we'd be happy to watch more Star Wars fan propaganda.
Or if you yourself have been videotaping yourself doing lightsaber moves.
We do reviews for Star Wars Kid as well.
We'll also do reviews for that. May the Force be with you.
Thanks for flying with us. We are interested to hear from you. You can reach us at starlorespodcast@gmail.com. Let us know your thoughts, comments, or corrections. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a 5-star rating, review, and subscribe. You can also help us out through our Patreon at The Star Lores Podcast. Find us on Instagram, The Star Lores Podcast, on Facebook at The Star Lores Podcast, on Twitter at The Star Lores Podcast, and on YouTube, Star Lores Podcast. We'll catch you next time.